Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
30 states since 2004 have considered the Taxpayer Bill of Rights passed by the state Senate this week, and all 30 have rejected it, thanks to overwhelming opposition from business leaders worried about the effect on state investments in workers' training and education. Here with more about what the proposal would mean for North Carolina is Amber Moody Dyer with the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center. Well, Amber, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me again, Chris.
Let's talk about, I guess now it's one constitutional amendment that's really three constitutional amendments, but that's been debated on the Senate floor this week. Let's start with the one that has the name that I think may have misled a lot of people who aren't familiar with it, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. First, tell us, if you can, sort of summarize what that actually is.
Right. So a Taxpayer Bill of Rights really has three components. It's a constitutional limit on revenue or spending. It also limits growth to a formula of population plus inflation. Thirdly, it sets a really high bar for being able to overcome that. And so that is exactly what we have as one of the multiple components of Senate Bill 607 is a Tabor piece of legislation in there, which would become part of the constitutional amendments, one of the elements. And essentially what that says is it limits our ability to make investments, to spend, to a formula, an arbitrary rigid formula of population plus inflation growth. And that's general population and general inflation growth. So there's a lot of problems with that. One of the biggest problems is that it doesn't actually reflect what the state spends its money on and what it needs to invest in terms of services. Because general population growth and general inflation rise at a certain rate. The populations the state serves, like seniors, services the state purchases, like healthcare and education, the cost of these goods, the size of these populations rise much faster than those general rates. So essentially, this arbitrary formula is locking in permanent cuts that just grow deeper and deeper over time.
So this would mean, if this were adopted in North Carolina, the year after it was adopted when lawmakers came to Raleigh, and if there was a great proposal to start a new or to expand pre-K or to reduce class size or a lot of the things that people have heard in the news, they would be virtually impossible.
That's exactly right. And it comes at a time when we are already still behind from the recession. We haven't caught up yet. So we're essentially locking in recession era spending. And that will just continue to grow over time as our populations grow bigger than the general rate, that the ones that the state's serving, and as the cost of services the state's paying for is growing faster than the overall inflation rate, those deficits will just continue to grow and grow.
Now, this is not a new idea. It's been around the country for a long time. And it's interesting that so many states have considered it, but only one has actually done it.
That's right. Early on when this idea came forward in the early 90s, Colorado jumped on right away and decided to try it out. I think because of what happened there, they provided a really cautious tale for every other state who's attempted this, has ultimately said, we're not going to let this happen. Essentially, what Colorado saw was an extreme cut to several key critical services like K-12, healthcare. Over time, you know, they had this in place for 10 years. They weren't even able to pay for the vaccines. So they had to waive the requirement that children would get immunized before school. I mean, that's a public health risk, you know. So things got pretty bad there before the people finally said, no, we have to put this on hold. And they did do that eventually. And so now no other state really has this in place. And I think North Carolina really needs to be wise to the lessons of our past and see that this isn't the road to go down for our future.
You mentioned the vaccines, and Colorado also had significant drops in rankings in a lot of important measures.
Yeah, that's right. They were actually kind of middle of the road when it came to K-12, per pupil spending, teacher salaries, higher education spending. They fell pretty much to the to dead last on most of those, or second to last, you know, and over time. The problem with North Carolina is we're already kind of close to the bottom on a lot of those measures. So we don't really have any further to fall other than past our own selves, you know. And so I think we would really see some serious problems with not only being able to do things like teacher salaries and get those to the national average, but just pay for enrollment growth over time. That would be a challenge under Tabor.
And it's interesting, if people have a philosophy that we're spending too much or that we need to cut taxes, regardless of whether it's wise, every legislature has the opportunity to make those decisions. It's
That's
interesting
right.
that you would put that in the Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, they're not doing anything they can't already do in statute, so, and that they haven't already done, frankly. I mean, we've seen them cut taxes over the last few years. We've seen, you know, spending not catching up to where it needs to be. we have a reserve fund already. You know, so that's another part of this package, the suite of amendments. That's now one amendment is, you know, this rainy day or emergency reserve fund. We have that. We've been putting money in it. Now, granted, we could continue to and need to continue to put more into that. But making these constitutional two-thirds supermajority requirements to even access it or waive a mandatory portion of our revenue going into that, that's really problematic because it limits our flexibility when we need, you know, in times of emergency, in times of recession, when we need to be able to access those funds.
Another part of this big amendment, another sort of sub-amendment, I guess, would be that would limit North Carolina's corporate and personal income tax rates to 5%, which would that puts that in the Constitution. That would actually, in some ways, use the Constitution to cut taxes.
Right. So, I mean, the problem is that, you know, we have a 10% cap right now, and so it would lower that cap to 5%. And the problem with that is right now we're at a 5.75% personal income tax rate. We've already seen that cut for the mostly for folks at the top over the last few years. And what that's done is it's reduced our available revenue. So we see now in this sort of budget negotiation, we're way over past, you know, time to have a budget. It's very difficult for us to make the needed investments that we do need to make because of the revenue we've foregone because of those tax cuts. Now we're talking about an additional, you know, dropping that from 5.75 to 5%. We're talking about an additional $1.5 billion of revenue loss, for example, next year. Now that piece of the bill doesn't take effect until 2020, which means that we're talking about even a bigger portion than $1.5 billion, obviously, because it'll be more by that time that we'll be foregoing.
Then what would happen if that was written into the Constitution, that it could never be more than 5%, and there is a shortfall, and lawmakers want to raise more revenues, they could no longer use income tax as an option, right?
That's right. It becomes near impossible to ever raise revenue in that way again. So what we've seen in states that have enacted these kinds of limits is increases in things like sales and property taxes to make up some of the difference. Usually it can't even make up all the difference of that revenue lost. And we know that those taxes in particular hit low and middle income families a lot harder as a percent of their income and creates a much more unfair tax system. And honestly, it doesn't create a system that is balanced because those taxes tend to be more volatile in times of economic recession.
This is all sort of based on a philosophy that we're investing too much already, right? That we're spending too much and that we need limits on what we can invest, even at a time when, as you mentioned, we're cutting taxes.
That's right. That's true. And I think what we know is that you know, there are a lot of needs that we aren't able to catch up on when we look across the board, our K-12 investments, higher education. We're nowhere near where we were before the recession. In fact, we'd have $3.2 billion more now if we were investing at the same level. And so we're just going in the opposite direction of that by implementing this amendment.
And before I let you go, the last question, get back to the taxpayer bill of rights, so-called, is that it's interesting that the opposition to this in many states, including in Colorado, but all these other states, has not just come from folks, advocates like yourself, but business leaders and other people who are worried about the future of their own states.
The business community knows this is a bad idea. I mean, they understand things like lending. I mean, we've already heard from our state treasurer that this would potentially decrease our bond rating and our ability to get money for roads and schools. And businesses also know that it's really important to be able to make investments in things like K-12 and higher education. And when we limit ourselves so much by this type of legislation, they realize that it's going to be very hard for them to have the trained workforce that they need to be able to succeed and thrive in our economy.
Well, let's hope that they come to their senses. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you.
Up next, how our capital punishment system puts innocent people at risk. Stay with us.